Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Let me put another log on the fire.
Now, here's a little story I got to tell about.
Tell me a story.
Like my story?
No, not your story. A story.
I have got a story for you.
Back in the old Chicago Stadium, they had these little boxes, and sitting with us was Mike Tyson and Robin Givens.
Hey, I ran into O.J. Simpson the other night. How about that?
Doug jumps up. He runs over there. He gets Bernstein in a chokehold.
I was in Vegas a couple years ago. Hey. Just an honest-to-God true story. Went to Kokomo's, a great little steakhouse.
I had an interesting exchange with him. I've never really reported this.
Yeah, Frank Sinatra was on line three, and baby, he wasn't crooning.
Yao Ming had his number retired that night.
We made the decision to trade Herschel Walker coming back from a jog.
I'm coming in the shower, and it was Bo Jackson butt naked, just standing right there.
So I look out the window, and there's Hampton pointing at the door. Excuse me. I said, oh, heck.
I don't think I know any stories.
You don't know any stories?
No.
All right, I'll tell you a story.
Tell you a story.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
We love story time on The Score, especially when there are no games going on. And Tom Thayer hung out with me for an 8-minute transition segment when I was solo maybe a month or so back. And in one 4-minute commercial break, he name-dropped Frank Sinatra and Mike Tyson in separate stories. I'm like, damn, this guy has some gems that at least I've never heard publicly. So we figured, let's bring him on and tell some stories and help put a smile on everyone's face. From Joliet, Illinois, former Bear and our friend and our partner over at WBBM, Tom Thayer. Tom, how you holding up during these weird times, my friend?
Yeah, it is weird, you know. I don't know what to say because I have no concern for myself. I have concern for the big picture of the world and the ultimate outcome here. So I think that it's just a weird time that selfishly no one can look at themselves. You only have to look at what hopefully is going to come out of this thing. And just trying to, you know, bide my time. We're doing some work at my mom and dad's house down in Joliet. And, you know, just trying to pass the time as efficiently as we can.
Tom, the NFL has marched on as though business as usual. And the draft is only, about 3 weeks and change away now. You okay with that, or you wish the league would park it for a little while?
You know, I'm okay with them going on with the draft because it's just the draft is kind of similar, Matt, to when we were young guys. You know, none of us are, you know, the high-profile guys from Marino to Elway to that whole crew. They weren't somewhere. They were home, and they waited for their landline to ring. So I think there's going to be some similarities to the old school style of drafting rather than all this fanfare and this big hug that means nothing by the commissioner. And, you know, you just kind of find out where you're going to play and see who's in front of you.
Do the teams at the Combine and at the Senior Bowl have enough of an opportunity to spend time with potential draftees?
You know, I think they do, but Dan, even though when they do, how many times do they get it wrong? That's kind of the frustrating thing about this picture is, yeah, everybody wants to say, oh, we need more meetings. We need more FaceTime. Well, if you have all that time in the past, why do so many of these decisions, you know, do you get them wrong? And so I don't, you know, I don't think that's going to hurt or hinder anything. Maybe it gives you something to blame it on in the long run or, you know, accept success for a pick like Brady years ago when no one knew what they were getting out of him. So, you know, I'm okay with the NFL taking the steps forward to make the decisions they have to make and get the draft. It's not like, you know, you got to put this thing back because you're jeopardizing putting people in mass groups.
What have you thought about the Bears offseason so far, Tom?
I think they've got better. I think they've got more competitive. And I think they've got competitive at key positions that can really decide the fate of the season and the team this year. You look at, you know, the complete lackluster performance and any type of analytical help from the tight end position. And I know Jimmy Graham is not like bringing in a young Rob Gronkowski, but he has been productive. And if you get out of him what you're asking to get out of him, don't be unrealistic about what he can contribute. If he can just give you something from the tight end position and be competitive in the red zone, you know, he's the type of guy that can come in and help you immediately. He can make up for some of the roundness of the throws of the quarterback, and he's got a big catching radius. I like the fact that they brought in competition at the quarterback position. Experience. I don't think that Mitch would ever shy away from competition, and I think Nick Foles is in a really interesting position because he probably knows the quarterback coaching room better than Mitch does. You know, Mitch is familiar with Matt and Dave Ragone. He's not familiar with the rest of the guys, and it seems that Nick Foles is at this point. And Robert Quinn is a more instinctful player than what Leonard Floyd, that you're getting out of Leonard Floyd. And I think that he's a better complement on the opposite side of either playing next to Akeem Hicks or playing on the opposite side of him and being on the opposite side or next to Khalil Mack.
All right, let's tell some stories here with Tom Thayer on the McNeil and Parkins show. Let's say you blew my mind with the Mike Tyson story and Frank Sinatra story. Like, let's just start here. Do you have a story that Tom Thayer thinks tops the Frank Sinatra story? Because I have a hard time believing that you do.
Gosh, Lee. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's the awesomeness of meeting a guy like Mr. Frank Sinatra, Mr. Sinatra, and having a chance to meet him in his dressing room, and you're awe-inspired because you hear all these stories of him hanging out with Edie Lawrence and Steve Gourmet, and there they are in the room as you're meeting him and stuff. So in terms of, you know, that upper epsilon or however you say
echelon.
That word.
Yeah, that's what you're looking for.
You know, that guy's the key ingredient. However, in the years of the involvement in the charity, along with Tom Dreesen for his sister Darlene, it was called Day for Darlene. Perks, the guys that I met in this charity, you know, just from the, you know, Smokey Robinson and Annette Funicello and Frankie Avalon. And I know this is an era of stars gone by, but they were, you know, big stars when I was a kid growing up, whether, you know, seeing Annette on Beach Blanket Bingo with Frankie Avalon or Smokey Robinson growing up and being the Motown star, the star that he is and always will be. So there's, you know, Dennis Farina and just these guys, there's a lot of opportunity to meet a bunch of great people because they're heavily involved with Dreesen's Day for Darlene.
Did you got who? I'm trying to think of who the celebrity hangers-on were with the mid-'80s Bears. Who were the celebs who were jock-sniffing?
I don't like to say it that way because, you know, I remember the NFC Championship game. We were in Dearborn Social Club at about 3 a.m. And, you know, it was me and, you know, Tom Dreesen was there. Ray Boom Boom Mancini was there. And, you know, other, you know, crew of guys just, you know, that were kind of, you know, as much related to Dreesen's, you know, Hollywood buddy and all that than us. But we just happened to be riding the high of the NFC Championship game at the time.
Danny, I want to share with you as well as Tom and get Tom's memory of this. There was an era in training camp when media were allowed to have lunch and breakfast and dinner in the same dining hall as the players, and they could talk to them and access was easy. And I think it was the camp in 89, and I'd been in Platteville for a few days already and had plenty of material, and it was starting to quiet down. So I decide, all right, I'm gonna make that run for Galena and head east and come back home. And when I get the AM loop back in in listening distance. I'm listening to Kevin Matthews interviewing Kevin Butler on a food fight that turned into a near fight with Dan Pompey when he was writing for the Sun-Times. Did you bear witness to said food fight, Tom?
I did not. I hear of a story, but at that time, I was in and out of the dining hall so efficiently fast that I never stayed around for, you know, the singing or just that type of stuff that could what it could turn into.
The singing?
Yeah, I mean, back then they used to make the rookies sing their team fight song, or if they didn't know the words to it, they had to come up with a song of their own. And you know, I was never a part of abusive hazing around training camp like some of the horror stories you hear about in college and in pros. So it was more of just as innocently done as, you know, the singing part of it, and it usually started with the first round draft choice and trickled its way down after that first dinner.
My perception just watching camps in Wisconsin was that was, and I think the time has come where it's passe. I think the team's moving home is progress, but I thought that was good for you guys. I thought you guys clearly bonded. I remember the mopeds being a big part, and then they took them away from you, right?
Yeah, well, we had mopeds, like 30 guys, 30-plus guys in the team had them. And then Harbaugh got in like a little accident when he got there. He couldn't coordinate driving the moped and holding his playbook at the same time, and he kind of went into a bush or something. And then they had like a visiting coach that came up that we were practicing against a team, might have been Jim Morris Sr., and he dumped off on a scooter too, and then I think they found him that after the 20 years where no one got hurt on him, that all of a sudden they were going to create a problem.
Tom, we had Ron Rivera on, and he was talking about Hamp sneaking out every night of training camp because he didn't have to do the two-a-days. The work hard, play hard nature of that 85 Bears team. When you think about that aspect of it, because like, in today's day and age, a lot of the guys are partying in private because of social media and camera phones and all of that. Like, when you think back to that, man, burning the candle at both ends with the 85 Bears, like, where do you go to in your mind?
You know, if you're talking about an extension to that one specific story, you know, offensive line, man, it came back to haunt us because in the morning was a run-concentrated practice. So it was a real physical at the line of scrimmage, beat-em-up type of practice. And we would go, you know, we would go like hell for 3 hours in the morning, and then all of a sudden you get a little bit of a reprieve in the middle with lunch and rest, and then you got to do it all over again as intense as it was in the morning. Now, but this is a pass practice. But now Hampton's in full speed. He's all jacked up, ready to go, and he's out there. You know, we're trying to block the 85 defense, and sometimes it's impossible because of not only how talented, how good they were, how fresh they practice, how much emphasis Buddy put on the pass rush, the defenses, the blitzes, and everything, and how it affected us on the other side. So, yeah, you know, we kind of, you know, the morning hazing probably was a lot of times directed at Hamp because you know, we would tease him a little bit about not practicing, but going like hell in the afternoon.
Tom, we've been talking about anticipating ESPN's documentary on the late 90s Bulls, The Last Dance. I don't think we talked about your 30 for 30, not yours, but the Bears, the mid-80s, late-80s Bears 30 for 30 documentary. I had several criticisms of it, but I'd love your take on the job they did with that story.
You know, I will say I'm always disappointed that they didn't emphasize how important the offensive production, the offensive line was to the overall success of that team and that era of the Bears. I think it's an offensive line when you can go and look at the stats that speak for themselves. And I had, you know, I was going through a weird time in my life because I had a couple of opportunities to do interviews for that piece, but my girlfriend was going through a lung transplant at the Cleveland Clinic, so I was never around. And so now let's speed up ahead because it was on TV a couple weeks ago, and I had friends all over the place that were calling me and saying they were watching it. And I do get disappointed because I think the offense is left behind in the overall accomplishments of that team. I don't think they emphasized how important Mike Ditka was, and he was the man for the job to be the head coach of that group of guys. And so I've always been just a little disappointed that they didn't compliment the offensive production a little bit more.
I agree with both of those criticisms. It was almost as though you guys didn't exist. And several guys on the defense told me they felt the same way, that you guys were slighted. A little too Buddy Ryan heavy for me, but the biggest critique I had of it was journalistically, they dropped the ball on how sour the decade ended and how much contempt there was from players to management. That's a huge part of the story. They covered the controversy of Peyton not getting the ball and subsequently pouting at the Superdome after the win over the Patriots in the Super Bowl, but they didn't tell the story about the finger pointing after the strike and Ditka calling the replacement players the real Chicago Bears. They didn't cover any of that stuff, and that was a huge part of how the decade finished unsatisfyingly.
I think because of the accomplishments of the Super Bowl team, anything after that it satisfied no one's appetite because, you know, when you have that opportunity to have such a successful season, then you have a good record the next few years in a row, and then you just fail to complete any of them. That's the thing that's always talked about that decade is the disappointment of only one Super Bowl. And I think it disappoints every one of us who, you know, were on that team for multiple years. And that's as much as fun as everybody, you know, you just mentioned the 85 Bears and everybody knows about that team, but it is disappointing that we're not mentioning the 85, 6, and 7 Bears instead of just the 85 Bears.
Does that sour the memories of 85 overall?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't because I think the older we get, the more it's forgiven and the better, the more, you know, friendships that we feel with each other when we do get to see each other. But I've never been to a reunion with those group of guys that topic has not been brought up. It's not something that's ever left in your rearview mirror and you only go forward. It is the regretful aspects of success is Walter not getting a touchdown and the fact that, you know, losing in the first round of the playoffs when you have the best record in the NFL, when you're the defending NFL champs, that and then later on and a couple of years later losing the NFC championship game, a couple of those disappointments could almost equal out a Super Bowl in some equations. But it's, you know, the greatest thing that we've had in our life is being a part of that Super Bowl.
Tom, after you finished with the Bears, you conclude your career with the Miami Dolphins. You play for Don Shula after Mike Ditka. Mike Ditka after George Allen. Those are pretty three significant names in NFL history. How was Shula after everything you experienced with Ditka? I imagine a much calmer atmosphere in Miami.
The intensity was equal. The atmosphere was much calmer. You're right. Don Shula, he ran the show offensively. You know, he let the defensive coaches, Tom Offaldotti and those guys, he let them do what the defense was doing. But Don Shula had Dan Marino in his hip pocket. They were one and the same. They thought like each other. And, you know, one thing I really wanted to go down and play with the Dolphins was I wanted to sit in team meetings and watch Don Shula lead the show when you were, you know, it was funny because when we were in Chicago with Walter Payton, when you'd put in the run game on Wednesday, it would take the entirety of every meeting that you possibly could have. When you went to Miami, the running game was almost like a second thought, you know, third thought of. It was like passing game, special teams, and run game. But then when you got to the passing game, it was sophisticated. They had protections that Marino was more of a threat than the pass rush was the threat. And that was incredible when you get up there and you see limited guys on the line of scrimmage because of the greatness of Dan Marino and the mind of Don Shula.
Mm-hmm. Tom, tomorrow at this time, we're going to have Steve Dahl on the show. I'm looking forward to that very, very much. You remember those days in the late 80s at the AM Loop, the greatest talk station in history. And, God, I've slayed some dragons over the years, but I don't think I ever felt better about doing any work than filling in for Bruce Wolf on Steve and Gary, and I was probably making a whopping $30,000 at the time and making Dahl laugh so hard that he was choking. We were making fun of Chet and playing previous drops from the previous night show. You've had a long-time relationship with Steve, so tell us a little bit about that, and you still remain close to this day.
Yeah, you guys are, there's a lot of similarities between the two of you. You know, you're super two talented radio guys in Chicago that I've been listening to for 20 and 30 years. I was a Steve and Gary fan long before I had a chance to meet them. And then I was driving home one day and I heard them making fun of a priest in Joliet, and I actually called him on the air and I said, "Hey man, stop that. That's unfair." And so it kind of really parlayed into a really close friendship. And then, I had we have adopted kids in my family, and one of our foster sisters was working at Chicago Recording Company, and she called me up and she goes, "Hey, Steve Dahl's here recording right now. You should come here and scare him." So I drove over there, and as he was behind the glass recording, I stood outside the glass, you know, like a tough guy with my arms folded and acted like I was mad. But, we've had a great friendship ever since then. And, still stay in contact with him as regularly as I possibly can. He's, like I said, you know, you guys are really similar in the radio business and with your skills.
Enormous compliment. Absolutely. He's the Steve and Gary Show. Danny Parkins is the all-time greatest show in Chicago radio history, and that is not subject to debate. It's a scientific fact.
Well, and they've done scientific studies on it.
It was talk radio. You know, that's like you guys. You know, you have opinions outside of sports, and you could probably venture off into any avenue that you had to. However, that, you know, back in the day when it wasn't sports centric, you know, heavy, and it was about all the other topics, that was really enjoyable radio of the day.
Tom, so yeah, we'll definitely talk to Steve about that tomorrow. I'm looking forward to having him on the air, a couple of radio titans in this city with Mac and Dahl on the air at the same time. You told me off the air, you know, it was after we were talking about being around McMahon back in the day and all that, but we were talking earlier to Tom Doerr, 90s Bulls stories, and then kind of the overlap of the Bears of the 80s kind of passing the baton off to the Bulls of the 90s. You have Michael Jordan interactions, right? You've golfed with him. Can you give us your best Jordan story?
I was really fortunate to hang around Michael Jordan because of Richard Dent. And Richard Dent and Michael Jordan are such good friends, and I am really good friends with Richard Dent. I had an opportunity to go to a lot of the Bulls games and play golf and go to a casino. But, I just always admired Michael because he cared about what he looked like, and he knew that was a reflection on what people would think of him. And when you were in his presence, you almost had a dress code to live by. And I kind of I flew under the radar as much as anybody, but I just really admired how well he cared about how he carried himself. And that was, you know, that was the neat thing about being around those guys. But, I'm a crappy golfer, and I don't have near the cash that he does. So I'm a nervous gambler when I would go to the casinos, which I haven't in a long time, and I'm a crappy golfer, so I can never bet him realistically anyways. But I was playing with Jay Hilgenberg at the time, and it was me and Jay against Michael and Richard, and Jay's a damn good golfer himself, so I was confident Jay could handle him.
What's his trash talk like on the golf course? Like, when does he make it easy on you, or does he make it tougher on you?
No, he's always trash talking. I can remember him walking into a multiplex when he with his trainer Tim Grover, and I'd be there and thinking I was really looking good and fit after I got retired, he would walk in and go, man, he's fat. You better get in shape, you know? And so it wasn't, hey, how you doing? It's good to see you, you know, nice catching up. It's just more of a, you know, kind of a macho comment. But it was cool because it was, you know, you're getting a commented to by the coolest guy on the planet at the time.
It's great stuff. Well, Tom, thank you very much for telling stories, and stay safe, man. We will we'll talk to you soon. We're hoping for a football season, so we hope to be talking to you frequently once again very soon.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you guys, Tom, and everybody else, stay safe.
Thanks, Tom. Have a good day,
bud. See you guys.
See ya.
How about that, Mac? A little you and Dahl, same breath from Tom Thayer. That's pretty cool.
Oh boy. Yeah, that's I'm blushing. I don't deserve that. And immediately the Brandmeier fans start chiming in, and guy points out via text, we both think very highly of Stern, but in his opinion, nothing like the Steve and Gary show. That's my all-time favorite because it's local, and it was local, and I got to be there and experience it. It was a great time to be in radio. It was still Ma and Pa Radio, Danny. Imagine that. Where's the owner? He's down the hall. Go talk to him.
Yeah, that is rarer and rarer these days. Not unprecedented. Some places have it, but it's very, very rare. What, for someone who didn't listen to it, what other than the ability to spray to all fields, obviously, was it the edginess, the comedy? What made it your favorite?
They push the envelope in every regard. Language, how rough they were on their competition. Steve shared everything about his life, which was very extravagant, and he was a party animal for so many years. After I stopped working with him, several years after that, he stopped drinking and drugging and got a hold of his life. But he was unpredictable. Gary was the ultimate, I thought, second banana, the straight man. His timing was impeccable, and they were as entertaining as any duo I ever listened to. And I'm just to have been a part of it, a small part of it, in my 20s, just to contribute when somebody else was on vacation, was just a thrill. And to see a guy who I admired so much and thought was so funny bent over choking with laughter at something I had done on his show, I don't know if I've ever felt a greater sense of satisfaction over that than that. That was something.
Well, you said, because that was what you made you feel like you would belong to on your trips with the Bulls when you had Dan Patrick and all of those guys laughing, and you were doing the
yes.
same thing, right? It was your Chet impression.
Yeah, when you can own somebody you admire, when you can have them in the palm of your hand, and it's only happened a few times, that's a pretty damn good feeling.
Chet Kopic, man, you're in with Dahl, you're in with Dan Patrick. That's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, Chet and Dahl did not like each other either. We'll talk with Steve about that tomorrow.
Okay, so Steve Dahl, tomorrow's show will be interesting. We've got William Peterson and Steve Dahl on the show. What time is Peterson, by the way? Is it 3
Bill
or 4?
Bill is going to join us at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon from Holly Weird, as he called it, and then Dahl at 5. So we're stacked the second half of the show, yeah.
Bill Peterson at 4 and Steve Dahl at 5 tomorrow. Max, March Movie Madness. We are down to a Final Four. The Elite Eight voting has ended. We will unveil the 4 best sports movies ever as voted on by you, the McNeil and Parkins listener, next on the screen.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Get down. Is losing fun? Is losing fun?
No.
What are you having fun for? That's what losing sounds like.
This is real!
March Movie Madness.
There you go.
Anyway, it's a great film. It really is.
March Movie Madness with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
The Elite Eight is over with a whimper, Dan McNeil. Lots of Cinderella stories. Had it all fizzle out. You have a Final Four in March Movie Madness, 670thescore.com, at McNeil underscore Parkins on Twitter, where you can vote. The Elite Eight, Moneyball, which you just heard there, lost to Field of Dreams, 61% to 39% of the vote, and that was the most competitive Elite Eight matchup that we had. Major League destroyed Happy Gilmore, 70-30. Caddyshack routed A League of Their Own, 72% to 28%. And Rocky all over The Natural by a 3-1 vote margin, 76% to 24%.
I want to say two things about movies that did very, very well in this March Madness tournament. Maybe not necessarily cutting down nets, but I'll get to that in a second. First, the soundbite Tanny picked coming out from Moneyball, where Brad Pitt as Billy Bean takes on the actor who was playing Jeremy Giambi of the Oakland A's dancing on a table in the A's clubhouse after a loss. I don't think we've ever talked about this. They did a terrible job finding somebody to resemble Jeremy Giambi. That actor who played Giambi, do you remember what he physically looked like?
He looked more like Nick Swisher.
He was rubber. Yes, he did. He looked like Nick Swisher, but he was as rubbery as your typical score producer. I mean, typical, not our guys, but typical score producers. And I used to be one of those pudgy producers once upon a time. That's what he looked like. He didn't look like an athlete at all. And his moves when he was dancing were just so pathetic. That's the worst part of Moneyball, was the casting of Jeremy Giambi.
Apparently, studio directors and executives felt the same, because the actor Nick Perazzo, he has one acting credit in his filmography on IMDb, and it's Jeremy Giambi.
That's it. Huh? Oh. That's all she wrote.
That'll do it,
Ron Coomer.
That'll do it.
That's precious. One credit to his credit. That's brutal.
You love Moneyball. I thought it was fine. I thought the book was incredibly influential, and I read the book in like 3 days, and you could see the impact that it had. I thought some of the individual performances in Moneyball were actually better than the film overall, but people seem to love it.
Yeah, well, you know, and I don't love the sabermetrics part of the game, but it educated me to it in a common man's way of understanding it a little bit more, and I thought it was well produced in that regard. They kept it moving in that capacity, and you're right about individual performances, and what it was a line of demarcation for Jonah Hill, who was just the chubby kid who was going to be the funny guy. You watched when you were growing up, and he was a teenager as early as when he did. He had a very small part of The 40-Year-Old Virgin in 05, and then he goes on to make a bunch of funny movies, and he starts to take a departure and take on serious roles. And I wouldn't say his role as the head bean counter, the head statistician, sabermetrician with the A's, Paul Podesta, is that challenging, but it was a shift for him, and he's done several since in a very convincing fashion. I don't know if you've seen True Story, where he stars as a disgraced New York Times reporter who wounds up sort of falling for a trick. It's a psycho thriller. James Franco is he's on trial for murder, and in an effort to save his career, Jonah Hill's character, the Times writer, tries to do a book with him, and it is really, really good. And I know you've seen War Dogs, which is a more serious role for Jonah Hill. So I think he's made The Graduation very nicely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how serious War Dogs is, but it's a pretty outlandish movie, but he is really good in it. But yeah, you're right. Moneyball, Wolf of Wall Street, and he's also done some things where he has produced like independent films and directed it and kind of transitioned into being a film creator and a director and all of that. And he did something on 90s skate culture that I know got a lot of critical acclaim. So yeah, I've got a lot of respect for Jonah Hill, and he's started to get nominated for some supporting actor awards. So yeah, that was kind of the transformation for him. The movie that lost in this round that I think just, you talk about Caddyshack and it's the most quoted movie in your life. I'm not going to say that Happy Gilmore is the most quoted movie in mine, but it is the Caddyshack of my generation of golf fans. Like, in terms of, are we more likely to, on the golf course, be like, na 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 from Caddyshack, or go to your home?
Why don't you just go home? That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me.
Send it home.
Exactly. We are much more likely to quote Happy Gilmore on the golf course than we are to quote Caddyshack on the golf course. Or, you know, it's like, all right, we did our drives on 18. It's a par 5. Now let's all do a drive like Happy Gilmore and see if we can actually connect and run up to the ball. Like, that movie for my age, people who like golf, like, obviously Tiger Woods, the most influential thing for golf fans of my generation. But I would say Happy Gilmore is a very close second.
It's a thrill ride. It's a lot of fun. There's nothing that isn't fun about Happy Gilmore, and I'm glad it did well in the tournament. The two movies that drew attention to what I need to do are A League of Their Own, which I only saw when it was produced in the early 90s. I feel really stupid that I've not given this movie another chance based on how much our audience likes it. That tells me I've missed something. And I feel the same way about A Field of Dreams. I just time travel is a real difficult putt for me, and I pass on it way more than I take a bite out of it. But I need to suspend disbelief for that and give Field of Dreams another try. I just thought it was horribly corny, and I could not get past the time travel element. And I need to do that because I'm also the same guy who enjoys Star Trek, the television show, not necessarily the movies that followed. But I need to let go of that and find out why those two films are so favorably received by sports fans. They're beloved.
They are beloved. I think you will like A League of Their Own more than you like Field of Dreams.
Probably.
Field of Dreams is everything that you say you don't like about sports movies. Yeah. You know, it's a little manipulative. It's all about the romanticizing of it. Feel good story, that sort of thing. So you've got to be a real baseball romantic and purist to fall for the line of, you know, have a dad have a catch and like that. Suspending the time travel is just one element of the cheesiness to me of Field of Dreams. But A League of Their Own, it's got some gritty moments. You know, you got your drunk manager, and it deals with death and war and issues of sexism. And, like, there's real elements of it with sports as the backdrop. So I think you're going to really like rewatching A League of Their Own. I'd be a little surprised if on the rewatch of Field of Dreams, you all of a sudden came around and were like, yeah, I'm really good.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm going to try not to take that attitude into it, but at least I'll understand it a little bit better. And when people quote it, I'll know what the hell they're talking about. And I have a difficult time. I'm among those who have a difficult time hearing the phrase, which originated on the East Coast, have a catch. We never in the Midwest said, let's have a catch. We said, let's play catch. And
right.
that's very hard for some of us to hear. And it's in Dewey Cox, Walk Hard, as well, when he meets his many, many children, the character John C. Reilly plays near the end of the film, where he goes and has a catch with his son Dewdrop. Don't say have a catch. That makes no sense. Play catch.
So now the final four is set, and you can vote at McNeil_Parkins on Twitter. March Movie Madness, as we try to figure out what the best sports movie of all time is. Field of Dreams against Major League. Caddyshack against Rocky. Rocky has been the most unchallenged movie throughout the tournament, winning by the most consistently wide margin. It feels to me, if I had to guess on the score audience, that the de facto championship game is the final four matchup between Caddyshack and Rocky. I think whoever wins that will beat Major League or Field of Dreams, whichever comes out of the top half of the bracket.
You're probably right. And I've been thinking about where we can go next with a tournament, not necessarily a Field of 64. That was for the NCAA tournament. But I've got an idea, and I was going to mention, I forgot to mention it in our brief show meeting today. I will I'll hit you guys up with a text a little bit later on, but I got an idea for a 16-team, not team tournament, but 16 entries, and I think you guys will like it, and I think maybe in a week or two we can get that up and rolling, because this is where we are these days, and we got to try and have some fun and let our audience participate in whatever way they can. And if voting on a silly Twitter poll tournament, get, you know, does it for you to take your mind off what's going on, that's cool with us. That's what we're here for.
Absolutely. Do you have a prediction on who's going to win this one?
I'm predicting Caddyshack wins the whole bundle.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I think justice will prevail.
God, I think I'm going to go with Rocky. I think Rocky is just considered such a good film. You know, the Caddyshack is amazing, and I prefer Caddyshack to Rocky also. I would vote for it. But, I mean, Rocky won the franchise it launches, Academy Awards, everything about it. The other three movies being baseball, the standalone of boxing. I got a feeling Rocky's going to end up winning this thing. But I'm looking forward to it. I actually think that pretty much this is the right Final Four. I would have never voted for Field of Dreams myself, but Rocky, Caddyshack, and Major League, I've probably seen each one of those at least 10 times. So
yeah, those are some heavyweights.
Yeah, three of the four I endorse in a big way. And Field of Dreams, you can't deny its place in the lexicon, if you will, among sports movies. So that's that. You can start voting for it at 670thescore.com to see the bracket, or at McNeil_Parkins on Twitter. Speaking of movies, you caught up with Bill Peterson today, right? He's excited. He's looking forward to coming on the Score tomorrow.
Yeah, William Peterson grew up in the north on the North Shore. He was a wayward kid as a youth, and we'll share some stories with us tomorrow on things he did to fill the time when he had better things to do than go to school and go to sporting events. And he has been in so many terrific films, not necessarily blockbuster films, not films that have been nominated for Oscars, but certainly some films that, for those of us who have seen To Live and Die in L.A. in 85, or Manhunter in 86, which was the prequel to Silence of the Lambs, and I think his best work. He plays JFK in the 2000 production of The Rat Pack, which was a made-for-TV, I think Showtime did it, either Showtime or HBO did The Rat Pack, which featured Don Cheadle as Sammy Davis Jr., Joe Mantegna played Dean Martin, Ray Liotta played Frank Sinatra, and William Peterson played JFK, and I am enormously fond of that film that's very, very much under the radar. And in it, William Peterson beds Michelle Grace, the wife of former Cubs first baseman Mark Grace. And we'll talk to him about that, what it's like to get in bed with Mark Grace's wife when you're a Cubs fan and you're shooting a movie.
Yeah, that is he will definitely be able – that is a Score story. That is a Score story if I've ever heard one. Tanny put it together in a text. I'm struggling to find it now. But the number of – like the actual list of some of the people that he's worked with, you know, Malkovich and here we go.
Gandolfini, James Caan.
Yeah, Nick Nolte, Ray Liotta, George C. Scott. He told the Gandolfini stories last time. Like, just in terms of being able to share a screen with and a trailer and downtime and craft services and all of that. Like, man, that you could do 2 hours with this guy based on his career and the longevity of it.
Yeah, and he has had a 25-year history of a bad sell every time he's been on the Score.
Yeah.
He finally got rid of the flip phone. He told me today, because I said to him after we talked for about 15 minutes, I said, wherever you're standing right now since we've been talking, stand there tomorrow so we're not losing you on the cell, because that is a terrible habit. I don't know if he walks around his house, which I've done that too when I guest on radio shows. You just sort of pace, trying to keep your energy level up, not knowing where the conversation is going to go. But, yeah, he says he's finally got an iPhone, but he's all set for 4 o'clock tomorrow. And, yeah, he's got stories. And, man, who else? Young Willem Dafoe. He took a sauna with Willem Dafoe. That was one of the first questions I had to ask him upon meeting William Peterson. Hey, I heard this story about Willem Dafoe. Maybe you can confirm it, because I know you guys sauned together when Dafoe was Rick Masters and you were Chance in To Live and Die in L.A. And before I even got to the question, he said, yes, it's true. Yes. Yes.
Willem Dafoe and Les Grobstein.
Willem Dafoe, yes. He's
use your imagination and you're probably right.
That's right.
I like it. We should mention, coming up in about 10 minutes, the first game, there's NLDS Game 1, Joe Ostrowski, Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer. We're going through the entire 2016 Cubs playoff run, and those guys are going to be doing a little pregame, a little intro, and then third inning, seventh inning, and then postgame, where they'll take your calls. It's going to be kind of like a DVD commentary, if you will, on the entire Cubs postseason run. So that's coming off when we get off the air tonight. And tomorrow, this is really cool, Mully and Haw will have Mayor Lori Lightfoot on the show at 8:30. So be sure to be listening to that, because her daily briefings are usually before we are on the air, but she has been great throughout this crisis as well. So she'll be addressing the Score audience with our morning show tomorrow at 8:30.
That's terrific. And the news today,
that'll do it,
was not good. I know our mantra is to always leave them laughing, but and we'll try, but it's difficult in the face of receiving news that almost 1,000 additional cases have been diagnosed in Illinois and there were 42 more deaths. It's tough to always smile, but we do the best we can, and hopefully everybody remains responsible and we can finally flatten this thing out. It's going to be a while, man. It's not going to happen in 2 weeks. It's not going to happen in four. We're in this puppy for the long haul, so we all got to get our heads around that and get used to it and follow the rules.
Very well said. If you want some answers to a lot of the questions that I know many of us have about COVID-19, Dr. Rob Citrenberg, the Director of Infectious Diseases at Advocate Lutheran General Hospital, answered our questions for about 30 minutes earlier today. You can find that on the podcast at 3 o'clock, 3 o'clock hour. Tom Doerr told Score stories of the 90s Bulls at 4. Tom Fair was our guest telling Bears stories at 5 o'clock. Nick Shepkowski is our executive producer. Bill Peterson, 4 o'clock tomorrow, 5 o'clock Steve Dahl, and at 4:45, Mac, I'm told, we asked a question yesterday about one of friends of the show and station, and we have a guest on who can address a cause and question that we had. So
I'm excited. That's going to be good.
Yeah, we will waste time together on some serious nonsense tomorrow at 4:45. Herb Lawrence, thank you very much for all of your help throughout all of these quarantine shows. Chris Tannehill makes us sound better than we are each and every day. For Dan McNeil, I'm Danny Parkins. We are McNeil and Parkins. This is The Score.
Thanks to that jerk Hugh Howlins.
Well, we didn't do much.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.